Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to my podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are at the most efficient way to get the podcast. Just go to the iTunes search engine, enter Warman Kickfighting Show, or enter Lord Gaul, and the show pops right up. I'm going to go ahead and get into it pretty quick. Pretty much got, you know, the biggest kickboxing organizations on the planet all have shows over the next 3 days. We've got K1 doing their thing, of course, with probably the best card for the weight class of the year when you look at them in their 65kg tournament. And then we've got Glory with a pretty solid card, of course, a very high-level card, the type of card you expect to happen on European soil with the Glory brand. And then, of course, we've got the Bellator event going down on Friday night. So I'm going to go ahead and jump into it. It's going to be pretty much just the big, you know, kickboxing organizations. There are, you know, some, you know, rumors here and there, news here and there. For example, Artem Levin, you know, once the celebrated champion for considered one of the better fighters in the world thanks to his skill set and his movement. Artem Levin used to be considered that guy for the Glory brand. They've apparently, you know, parted ways. Guess, you know, those two fights that didn't look that great, and the way he quit during the fight because he was upset because he thought that the refs and so on were biased, and just the whole situation there with how the clinch calls went down, and he felt he was being picked on, and he stopped. That happened in a title fight and on TV. They decided to go in a different direction, which is just really unfortunate, because once upon a time, I mean, after he had won the middleweight title, there was just this rumor that this was the guy, you know, like this was the best striker on the planet. Different angles, the way he threw his offense. I had him as my kickboxer of the year that year. Just the flash, the ease in which he can do spinning techniques, and yet he still had a good boxing skill set. It's unfortunate that it come to an end like that for them, and it is a hit to their brand. The 188 pounds, I want to say, or 187 pounds, I think it is. Around that weight class, he had always been, that's the Glory's like weight class that I think they use the most, that they promote the most since they've kind of, you know, put this resurgent back into the brand. But it's never good to lose elite talent, you know. So the thing with Tyrone Spong, never good that ended. You know, Kokansaki came back, and then of course he's got the injury that he's kind of working through, and you know, here goes another top guy, Joe Schilling, gone. It's never good to have that happen to your kickboxing brand. But, you know, hopefully he'll find himself, you know, it'll land on his feet. There's, you know, Bellator kickboxing's out there, still good money. There's always that, you know, China money, of course. He wants to compete. They'll definitely have money for him in China. And who knows, maybe K1 will consider going into bigger weight classes. But we're going to go ahead and jump into what K1 is doing right now. The reason why I'm starting with tonight's K1 World Grand Prix 2016 65kg World Tournament is because if you're listening to this podcast, it's actually going to happen probably about, I don't know, I want to say 16 hours from right now, 18 hours from right now. So for those who get a hold of it, maybe they don't have to wait to the end to hear what my input is on some of the results in this. So I'm hoping that everybody gets to listen to it and they enjoy it and they really have a good time with tonight's card, because it's really going to be a lot of fun. I'm probably going to take a nap here in the afternoon, and then I'm going to try to stay up and go through the whole card. It looks good to me. So let's go ahead and jump right into the field. First of all, it needs to be said, I brought it up at the beginning of the card, I truly believe that this is the best 65kg tournament in the world. It's got the athletes, most athletes that I would consider elite, with Kufertex, with Masaru Glunder, with Masaki Nor, with Elias Belade. I like those names, where they stand in the world, you know, as far as what, you know, the kickboxing view is. And let's not forget Hideaki Yamazaki, who just won the 65 Japan tournament. He's still a solid name too. He's got wins over, you know, Nori. So it's like he win over Nori. So it's a fun tournament all throughout. And let's not forget, on the reserve bout, we've got Minoru Kimura as he takes on Japanese fighter No Man. I'll go ahead and go into that one. Go ahead and start with that fight. I think this is a KO. It's got to be a KO for Minoru Philip Kimura. He's, you know, strongest guy, one of the strongest guys in the weight class. He's going to, you know, bite down on the mouthpiece, close the distance, and he's going to throw that heat. I think Noman might have some moments here and there with single strikes, but I don't think he's ever going to hang out for a combination. If he does, he's going to get caught and he's going to go down. I see this as a KO for Kimura. He's always been a talented guy. Wouldn't be surprised if something happened to get him in the tournament field, but starting off the card, and again, this might be a little bit easier fight card to watch, you know, as Yoyogi Stadium has always been a good place to watch fights. I've seen several fights there through the years with Max Brand and so on. I like that this is going down, and I like that this guy's on the card. He's got to open up the TV broadcast, I would imagine, because he's such a beloved figure. Like, people like him, you know, the Brazilian who you know, looks like a Caucasian dude who speaks very, very fluent Japanese, and he's just well-loved in the area. He's should be good, you know, and of course, and he's huge on the dab right now. So dab's, like, become this international thing. He loves it to death, so you always see him do that on Instagram and so on. Expect a KO, any dab from Kimura. Sorry, got it. Just got through eating, so forgive me for the pronunciations. We go into the tournament field. As I mentioned before, Hideaki Yamazaki is going to go against Stanislav Renita. I think this is a good fight for Yamazaki. I would not rule out Renita getting a victory here. He has showed me something in the past, but he just didn't show me enough to beat Yamazaki, who's just on fire. You know, I think Yamazaki's going to get the decision here. Again, you know, the tournaments, fields, there's always things that are involved, luck's involved in that. But Yamazaki coming off that 65kg tournament win's got to be good for the confidence. I think that he gets the win here and moves on. Next fight, Ilias Blade, as he takes on Chris Masari of the USA. Chris has fought for a line fight before. He is a solid fighter. He is not going to beat Ilias Blade. He's going to have to show something that I haven't seen before. So let's not go say impossible. But man, he's going to have to catch him. He's going to have to show me a skill that I haven't seen. And again, he's got some in his skill set. There are kickboxing signs. Like, there are things where I'm like, oh, his kickboxing's there. He's all right. You know, cause some of those Muay Thai guys, their style lends itself to being just for Muay Thai. Not just for Muay Thai, but just for Muay Thai against the competition that they face. Some guys who are, you know, fighting and competing in America, their skill set lives here, and it's not supposed to be successful anywhere else. Like, it's just kind of the nature of how they play it. And there are some people who are in, you know, Russia that have a skill set that works in Russia, works in kickboxing in Europe, works in Muay Thai in Thailand. There are people all over, and who you fight, who you compete with, that kind of dictates how you perform. And Chris is a guy who's shown me some kickboxing skill to say that he can have some competent moments. But for him to beat Ilias Blade, who is just a combination machine, a guy who's, you know, can hit from both stances, a very strong, he's, you know, got probably close to 100 fights. You know, it's just, I just can't see it happening for Chris Masari. I think he can be game, but Ilias Blade will move forward. Masaru Glunder and Masaki Nori meet again. And the thing that was Masaki Nori's downfall the first time they met was he plays behind that high guard. That's his big thing. He'll walk into you, no problem, kind of walk into you, going glove to glove, looks to get that low kick game going. He's going to have to start that earlier, and he's going to have to stop doing that walk up, because the thing that opened up for Masaru Glunder was the step up knees. He split the guard, jumping knees. As soon as Masaki gave him those opportunities, he was already attacking through the middle. He was like, oh, if you're going to sit there with your guard on, I'm going to go ahead and put my volume in between. And Nori, of course, he knows his game. He believes in his low kicks, and he knows that they'll stop you eventually. The problem with that is the knee got through and cut him, and it completely eliminated his ability to come back. And again, he was losing the fight before it. He was planning on, and it happened early in the second round, he was planning on, okay, the culmination of this work is going to get me round two and then round three. The way when he fought Ilias Blade, he probably still won the first round there too, but he stayed with that steady low kick work, and then it showed up for him down the road and ended up scoring a down due to low kicks in the final round. Masaru Glunder had the fast start. I think he does that again. I think he comes out letting his hands go, but I think that the result is way different now. I think Masaki Nori is going to get the victory here. I think that he's going to make the adjustment, get the combination of low kick flow going pretty early. And I think he wins in a very entertaining bout. We move on to the last fight of this tournament field. Kufair, Texas, he takes on Hiroya. Hiroya has gotten so much better. And we're talking about, I say it on this podcast all the time, we're talking about a young man who, of no fault of his own, was pushed to be the next super fighter when he was like, you know, 14, 15 years old, and got pictures with him and Masato, and they did this thing that got TV airtime where he came in and he did this, you know, exhibition, you know, headgear, what would be, you know, a sparring, you know, session on a K1 Max card. And, you know, people watched it because it's Masato, and here goes the young kid. And then I had friends who were out there who were like, this guy's being forced on us. You know what I'm saying? Like, this kid is getting, you know, international fans. We got no problems with Hiroya except for the fact that it was on TV. If they had did that on, like, a YouTube push, we'd have been fine with it. But because we were looking for the best fighters in the world to get those slots so that those fights could end up on YouTube for us to watch it later, we didn't like the idea that Hiroya was getting a spot, you know, at 16 years old, 17 years old, that wasn't for the best fighter on the planet. And our best fighters on the planet. So the international, you know, perception of him and the Japanese perception of him for fans of K1, they were kind of sick of him. Flash forward to now, last couple years, last 3 years, an example. And when we got him, he's going into his mid-20s now and completely turned himself around. His fight with Masaki Nori, one of the fights of the year. He's had some awesome KO victories, fighting for Max Muay Thai. Been down to Thailand, compete, still runs that gym. Hiroya, reputation-wise, turned himself around. And he's a fighter that you want to see, and he's very entertaining. Despite that long intro, I cannot see how it's possible that he beats Kufair Tex. Kufair Tex is the best in the world. He's strong for the weight class. He's got the hand speed. He's got the pull counter down with his left hand. Closes the distance. Aggressive with that left kick. Keeps you off balance. He's got it. Hiroya does have the pop to maybe score down in the fight, you know, in the way that Kimura was able to score down against Kufair Tex, but I just don't see it. Kufair Tex wins. Kufair Tex probably wins by stoppage, I'll even go and say. I think that he might even be able to stop Hiroya in the end of the second round. He's got that kind of skill set, so he moves on. Hirotaku Urabe takes on Kosuke Kimuyama as a 60kg super fight. It's weird because Urabe is having an interesting year because Hirotaka has lost. They've had these super fights for him, and he's been competing in the last couple events, and he's been losing. You know, it's just he, you know, had the great moment where he gets the victory over his brother last year after losing to his brother. Gets the victory over his brother earlier in the year after losing to his brother last year. And it's just, both fights took place last year. So you look at that and you say, okay, this is what's going on. This is where he is. He's going to be the best 60kg fighter on the planet. And then inconsistency follows. I think that he should beat Kosuke here. I mean, Komiyama is a good, you know, talent for the local Japan scene that I don't think could stretch to international competition, whereas Urabe has beaten international competition. I think that he can win this fight for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if just the natural slide of him not performing the way that he should be would continue. You know, it wouldn't be surprising to me, but Hirotaka should win this fight. We're going to go ahead and go back into the tournament field. So we've got Ilias Belade, and he's going to meet Yamazaki. I think that Ilias Belade wins this one. I think he wins it easy. I think that Yamazaki, he scores well, but his style, it leads into what Ilias Belade does well. So when Belade came out and he struggled in his two fights, of his three fights in Japan, he won the reserve fight quite easily when he, you know, first entered the K1, 65kg. He was a reserve fight, I want to say, 3 years ago. He came in and he won his fight pretty easy. Not the typical Ilias Belade dominant combination the low kick kind of barrage that you're used to seeing. But I think that there is a really, you know, good chance that that guy was going to be the guy I'd see for the next few years. So it wasn't the case. He then went against Masaki Nori. Again, it's a battle of two of the best guys in the world, the weight class. Masaki Nori got the victory there. No shame in that. And then Belaid fought Kufertex in the last, you know, K1 World Grand Prix, or excuse me, K1 Japanese event that took place a couple months ago in April. He fought on that card, and on that card, he did a good job of being, you know, competent with Kufertex, but he just didn't show the skill set to beat him. But I wanted him to fight this competition. I wanted him to be on this card, and I love that he's, you know, made his name as a young up-and-coming star who was KOing people and put in crazy volume for the Infusion kickboxing brand. But this is what needed to happen next, and it's what needs to happen to all their stars. Their stars, keep that relationship, keep that contract if you can in Infusion, keep making your money as a prize fighter, but it's got to lead towards you fighting the best fighters in the world, and the competition isn't necessarily always the best fighters in the world when I look at the Infusion brand. Sometimes they can have two matchups that are just crazy, talented guys, but a lot of times you have, you know, you're going against the champion of a certain country, and then that's how you get your victory and you move forward. This is a better example of going against the elite competition in the world. So Belaid should beat Yamazaki, despite the fact that Yamazaki, you know, caught fire. I just think this is the kind of fight that he could run into trouble. I wouldn't be surprised if the fight was close enough to have an extra round, but I just like Elias Belaid to score more consistent offense. He moves into the final. So now the head-scratcher for me is, can Masaki Nori's low kicks, quick kick combination style beat Kufertex? And Kufertex is the champion. He showed nothing but being the superior guy at the weight class because of his strength and so on. I do think Nori has the tools to get the victory here. I will say this. No matter who wins this fight, they beat Elias Belaid. The only thing that could keep them from beating Elias Belaid is what this fight does to them moving forward, because it is a tournament field. Masaki Nori is kicking. You got to be. I don't care if you're checking the kicks or not. Masaki Nori is going to be low kick. His shins are prepared for it. He's going to be low kicking, body kicking. He's going to be going. But Kufertex got those, that subtle movement. He's got that. He knows how to be just out of range all the time and just in range all the time. You know, just the subtle steps, side steps. He'll do, you know, what I call a drag steps when southpaws go to their left and they make people pursue with the right hand. And the whole time, the whole goal was for them to set up the counter left-hand side. And then he'll fire that counter and then he'll put the kick to the body or kick to the leg right behind it. He does the drag so well. But Masaki Nori has no problem following, so he doesn't really drag as much. So if you sidestep, he doesn't turn to follow. You know, like he doesn't, you know, go left leg to left leg. He doesn't, like, kind of follow you the way that you would learn in your beginning kickboxing Muay Thai type classes. The way Glunder does is, or excuse me, the way Nori does it is, if you move away from Nori, he'll just casually put the earmuffs up and walk towards you. If he does the earmuffs with Kufertex, Kufertex is going to touch him up and turn, touch him up and turn, and Nori's going to lose on points. But this is the one kind of fight where I do think Nori can put enough offense to keep it close. And I could see this one going into an extra round. And this is might be one of those fights where you're like, oh, man, Japanese judges, I could see it coming into play. It could also be one of those fights where Stephen Wright is extremely biased towards Masaki Nori. Also a possibility. But I think Masaki Nori is going to pull off the upset and beat Kufertex. Once again, Kufertex wins this fight. It's what's, I mean, I see this in my mind alone as a 50-50 type fight, and I think some people might lean towards the champion, but I've watched Kufertex fight enough to say that he leaves opportunities if you've got volume. It's just that some people aren't brave enough to do the volume because of his counter-striking. Because Nori can do the volume with his kicks, I could definitely see an opportunity where as long as he doesn't fall on his butt and takes a 10-8, he's got an opportunity to take this to an extra round. And when it gets down to that one round, you never know. Let's not forget, Masaru Glunder lost a split decision to Kufertex. So as good as he is, let's not go thinking that he is this, you know, elite guy that's untouchable. We're not talking about Georgia Petrosian here. We're talking about a really, really talented guy, though. You know, so I got Nori winning slightly, but this is a 51-49 in my mind. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, the way Japanese score fights. You know, even though they lean towards the boxing, if the hometown guy could put up enough volume to give an argument in their mind, I could definitely see it happening. So Masaki Nori goes on, and then I have him beating Ilias Blade. One thing that works to Blade's favor is the murderer's row would be on the top group, you know. Now, again, I'm just going off of how I have this list in front of me. It does not necessarily mean that that's how this tournament field is going to play out. I apologize if I am wrong with how this is laid out. I am literally at the Wikipedia page reading off how they have the fights in front of me. That's the order that I've been going in. So I know I have the first round fights right, but I don't know if I have the brackets necessarily correct. I apologize. And I made that mistake before in the past. Sometimes what I read off to you guys is different than how they broadcast it on TV or how they try to play with it. But that's how I've got it going. I got Masaki Nori winning the 65kg tournament. And if not him, I have Kufertex winning the tournament. And I have that person meeting Ilias Blade. Depending upon, of course, that this is how the tournament bracket works out. Because literally that's how it's laid out in front of me. We go to the final super fight on this card. As the superstar, the now fighting at 57kg. They just have him fight at whatever. He fights at 55 when he wants to defend his title. But right now, he's fought at 56. He's fought at 57. This is at 57 as super fighter, Takuru, fighter of the year for me last year, takes on Kato Ozawa. First of all, you guys saw me. If you've watched me on Twitter, Steven the Warren Man is my Twitter handle. You guys saw that I, you know, put up the link of their press conference when they met, and Kazawa got in his face, and Takura pretty much did a tie dump on him, you know, with the hand and the, you know, collar tie, if you will, knee to the inside of the thigh, and then he turned him, you know, kind of like a, it can be called a foot turn. You know, foot's not really involved. I really kind of see it as, you know, hitting the knee and the bicep and that turn, so more of a tie dump. I think I may have called it a foot turn when I posted it on Twitter. I can't remember exactly. But Ozawa goes down in embarrassing fashion to Takura, and it's just and it just kind of got the juices flowing for how exciting this fight could be. Because, you know, if you've ever watched Takura fight before, Takura is throwing that heat. He is letting them hands go. For you guys, I've mentioned him on the podcast before, but if you haven't, go ahead and Google K1, T-A-K-E-R-U, and you're going to see some fun stuff. Because this guy, he's throwing out, he ain't playing, you know. And he's gone down and got up and scored KOs before. I think this is a KO for him. If anything, if Ozawa goes the distance, Ozawa will probably take a couple downs before it happens. But man, it's just, we've got a guy who is just bigger. Bigger weight class means he doesn't have to have as much of a cut. Now, you can make the argument that maybe his KO pop may not, you know, hold as much. But when they were looking at each other, you know, at the stare down, I truly believe that this is a fight that's made to order for the champion to do his thing. So Takuru wins. I'm going to go ahead and say by KO stoppage to Ozawa. And then he joins Masaki Nori as the big winner of the night. If you were to give me a dark horse for who could possibly win it all, I would say Yamazaki. And the reason why I say that, despite the fact that I have him losing in the semis to Ilias Blade, it's just I feel like the winner of that bottom four has a good chance of beating the winner of the top group if injuries and so on prohibit you from competing. Because in no way ever would I pick, you know, I look at like some of the tournaments that have happened throughout the years, and there have been, you know, Jerome LeBanner was an unstoppable force the year that he lost to Ernesto Hoos. He had won all his fights that year. He did get KOs in like five of the seven, I want to say. And 7-0 goes in there, wins the first two rounds. And then all of a sudden an injury happens and he loses. Next thing you know, we see Ernesto Hoos, four-time K1 World Grand Prix champion. And we say, you know, Jerome LeBanner never happened. So that's just kind of how the game is. Tournaments are tournaments. So we never know what could happen. The most likely scenario is, of course, Kufertex winning it all. That's the most likely scenario. He's the best guy in the world. And he, you know, really does have the skill set to win this thing again. But I think it should be a fun night, and I'm going to try to be up. I'm going to try to watch it. So definitely come hang out with me if you're interested, you guys. I will be on Twitter, provided I find a good stream or something like that. If not, I'm going to sleep, and I'll just tell you guys about it tomorrow. Go ahead and go into... We'll go the next closest card. We'll go ahead and jump into the Dynamite card and the kickboxing fights on the Dynamite card and the Bellator kickboxing event that's going down tomorrow night. Go ahead and jump into that now. That's happening in St. Louis, I want to say. First, we are in St. Louis and we go down. There are some undercard kickboxing fights. I'm not going to bring them up as much. I'm going to go ahead and go straight to Denise Kielholz as she goes against Gloria Pirittori. Again, Denise Kielholz, one of the best fighters on the planet in the women's game. Like, she is very skilled. She's down to exchange for someone. Again, I'm glad they're using her because she really is a beautiful woman. So it's helps to, you know, if fair or unfair, it's one thing to be a talented female fighter. But if you are an attractive female fighter, it has way more opportunities. It's just the nature of the audience is still majority men, you know, and it's just that's just kind of how it's going to be. Fair or unfair, that's how it's going to be for all of time and all of things. Men are always going to be drawn to what they are physically attracted to. Women are drawn to what they see as beautiful. So it's like, it'll always be that way. Not that you won't get respect for your skill set. Not that people who are not as aesthetically, promotable doesn't mean that you're unskilled for it. It just means that you won't have the opportunities of other girls. And that's how it is in the men's game too. It's just not to that extent. Clearly a guy that is physically attractive and talented is going to make more money than a guy who's just talented. But it's so much more, the degree is so much greater in the women's game. Denise Kielholz brings those opportunities because she's, like you said, she's pretty. She speaks English like clear. So she can, you know, do the interviews, that kind of deal, whatever. But her style, she's going to get in there, the combination of low kicks, she's going to let her hands go. First, you know, kickboxing glory match I felt was just kind of a get-it-going type of match, but it was still a good, solid victory over a solid opponent. She's going to beat Gloria here. I see a three-round decision. Kevin Ross continues his kickboxing foray. He takes on Justin Houghton. This is another good fight for Kevin Ross in terms of it allows him to continue to grow his kickboxing skill set. Because the guys are really, really good at that weight class in the world. And for him to, you know, be of a spot where, you know, because we're talking the, you know, that whole 65 kg tournament that I was just talking about, Kevin's pretty close to that. You know what I'm saying? Like, his weight class is pretty close to where those guys compete. So we're talking about some really, really tough opposition out there for him. So I like that he is getting his grounds to get his kickboxing skill set going one fight at a time. Just take the fight, get better, grow, and then, excuse me, had a belt there. Grow your skill set, and then later look for that big fight opportunity. It'll happen in its pacing, you know. So go ahead, get your kickboxing feet under you. Take a little bit tougher fight, then another tough fight, and just kind of grow it. And the next thing you know, you're right where you want to be, competing against the best fighters in the world with the ability to play with just kickboxing. Because you're a Muay Thai guy, and the rhythm's a little bit different. So this is a good fight for him. Justin Houghton, he could surprise me with something that I hadn't seen before, but I do think that Kevin Ross has the advantages here. Going to go ahead and go into the kickboxing glory, you know, event that's are the Bellator kickboxing events that's to follow this. We got Raymond Daniels again, and we've got, you know, him go against Stefano Bruno, and he's going to beat Stefano Bruno with some sort of spinning KO thingy. Now, Raymond Daniels, of course, he's been on the news a lot in MMA because he was the main training partner to help prepare Rory McDonald for Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Because once upon a time, Raymond Daniels and Wonderboy fought in what was supposed to be the big fight of the World Combat League, and then there was an injury that happened. If it happened in K1, Raymond Daniels would have won by TKO. But they decided to make a no contest to keep. They didn't want it to end that way, and it was a really bad injury. And shout out to Wonderboy for being able to come back from that. And you know, it's never good to see people go down with knees and that kind of injuries or whatever. But that's the skill set that we're talking about with Raymond Daniels. Like, he comes into it with, he's had success against guys from the karate style, and he's had success against guys from the kickboxing style. Stefano Bruno is going to have to do something that I don't think that he can do. Nicky Holtzgen, best fighter on the planet at the weight class, is able to mentally turn himself into what he needs to be to win a fight. So for Raymond Daniels, he just pressured, ripped the body, And it meant that he could run into something spinning here and there, but he wasn't going to let Raymond Daniels get into space. But Nicky wired himself to do it, and he went out there and he did it. It's so much tougher for other people to do it because they're not Nicky Holdskin, you know? So Stefano Bruno is going to have to try to go out and do that to Raymond Daniels, and he's not going to be able to. I think more than likely he's going to do what most fighters do. They get into space with Raymond Daniels, and they think, okay, hold on. As long as I use my vision, I can still work the kind of way, the offense that I've had success with forever. And then the next thing you know, you just got spun kicked. You know what I'm saying? You just took some spinning flash kick, and you're laying on the ground. You can't give this guy space. And when you do close the gap, you still have to got to be defensively conscious because he's such a great athlete. Those hands are coming fast. He's got amazing hand speed. So Raymond Daniels wins in what should be a pretty dominant one-sided KO stoppage. First round. I don't see a second round. Probably first round. Kerry Melendez is coming back. Now, this is a fight I'm just mentioning because it's getting kickboxing airtime, and Kerry Melendez, the wife of, MMA fighter, Gilbert Melendez. She made her way onto the Dynamite broadcast last time because she was a local favorite, and she wasn't from, she fought in the San Jose area. And this card that card was her opportunity to get on TV and show really, really good kickboxing against a girl that she's far better than. But at the same time, people wanted to see more of her. And if there's one thing that Bellator is about, it's about who do the people want to see. So Kerry Melendez gets this fight with Sarah Howell. Again, I think it's another showcase fight for Kerry Melendez. She's got good kickboxing. The one thing that I would like her to do is to stay with her combination of low kicks a little bit more, because when she throws them, people can't stop them. So if you build on them, you've got your stoppage and low kicks in the second round or in the third round. But she'll do it, and then she'll abandon it and play with something else, and then she'll abandon that, and then she'll play with something else, and then she'll come back to the low kicks. And that's really good if you're, like, winning a sparring round in the gym, if you're playing with skill set, trying to get yourself better and so on. But as impressive as she looked, I think her next step is to see if she could put some of these girls away. And putting them away in kickboxing usually means you've wounded the legs to the point where a down happens because of low kicks. Are they slow significantly enough for your hands to really be able to let fly? So I think that would be cool if I could see Kerry Melendez get a KO stoppage here. But Sarah Hall, well, we'll see. I mean, maybe she'll show something that I had not seen before. But Kerry Melendez, this fight was made for a reason. And the way that last fight was made for a reason. But that's how upsets happen. Next fight on the card, and the main fight I'm going to talk about, is Joe Schilling versus Sasaki Kato. This fight is put together for one reason and one reason only. Kato got a MMA KO of brutal fashion and a switch stance kind of Superman-ish thing over Joe Schilling in an MMA fight earlier this year. Joe Schilling is now back. He's been working his kickboxing skill set, and they decided that, hey, they want to see this fight in kickboxing. Clearly, this is one of those fights where you got a little bit of, some people in the kickboxing community are a little down on it because of the way they feel it's come about. Some people feel, as I look at my Twitter wall, I think some people feel that Joe Schilling and this kind of fight, first of all, they feel like the MMA fights that Joe Schilling has gotten so far are fights that he's made to look good in, and he has not. So a lot of people are kind of down on him for that. He got the win over Melvin, but since then he's struggled a little bit. People have kind of looked at that, and they were like, man, this kind of fight isn't against an elite kickboxer, and they've kind of had those struggles. But the way I see it is, hold on, slow up. Joe Schilling seems to love the Bellator people and the Bellator brand. Like, he's excited about it. He had, a bad split from Glory. Apparently he felt the commentary was, paid to say negative things against him. It's so bad because we're talking about the guy who, he's very financially secure, and Glory helped there. How many kickboxers, he just said he got a sponsor that got him a Ferrari the other day. How many kickboxers can say that? You know what I'm saying? It's just, he has, with that tournament win, bringing in, the 100,000, I can't remember what it was when he won it. I think it might have been 200,000 when he won the Glory tournament a few years ago. He's been a guy who's been able to put some money in his pocket in kickboxing. And the Bellator brand seems to be putting more money into his pocket to do both kickboxing and MMA. So I'm excited for him to be able to make money as a prize fighter. So despite how you feel about this fight, I still can't be nothing but happy for Joe Schilling and what he's doing in the sport. I think that him and Cato are, Cato's style in MMA, those lapses, those gaps of not being consistent in offense enough, give Joe Schilling the opportunity to win. Plus, Joe Schilling can play with that southpaw stance and just kind of pop shot, you know, and kind of get up on the scorecards. It's something that he played with in the Wellness fight. Joe Schilling's a tough dude. And I'm curious to see what happens to his career now that he's in Bellator. And there are some solid talent out there that's unsigned, you know, around, that middleweight weight class. There's some talent out there that he could use. You know, we've got the Infusion's got some guys, you know. Artur Kashinko's been fighting a little bit bigger now. So there are some fights out there for Joe Schilling that are not in the Glory brand. So hopefully it keeps it going, keeps it rolling. We will go ahead and finally go into the big Glory card this weekend. Like I said, I wanted to touch on the big three. And I think that the fights that I'm seeing for the Glory card that's going down on Saturday, they're good stuff. Just, it's a fun card. I'm excited about it. I'm excited to sit through it. It's got some stars that I've been high on in kickboxing for quite some time. And then we've got some guys where I'm curious to see how things go. So let's go ahead and jam through this undercard. We've got, Ivan Denneberg as he's going to take on Maximo Suarez. Finally, Maximo Suarez is, you know, a guy who I love, and he was all action his last time fighting. He's a great kickboxing talent. And the fight with Denneberg, who is, you know, a Dutch-based trained fighter, it brings the kind of opportunity for us to have that combination of low kick flow exchanges that I love to see. I personally think Suarez is more of a lightweight. He should be fighting around the 70 kg mark. He kind of carries weight in the stomach a little bit, and I think that he's lost his strength in the past. But I do think that, you know, Denneberg's a good fight for him. I think they're going to put on an awesome kickboxing show to get this card started off, and I think Maximo Suarez is going to outscore him. But let me tell you guys something. Some of you guys saw it last time. Some of the people here who've been, you know, following the podcast, who've been following the Glory brand, even though he lost to Haraka Gorian, you saw a piece in that first round of just how much this guy can put together that kickboxing, low kick flow. He is an awesome kickboxer, and it's so great that Glory is using him consistently. I got Maximo Suarez winning a very entertaining fight. Now what's probably going to be the fight of the card. Jess Chauncey taking on Anatoly Moiseev. I am really high on Anatoly Moiseev. I think he's very, very talented. I think Jess Chauncey's going to get him. I think that Jess Chauncey's taller. I think there's going to be a lot of kickboxing and low kick returns. I think Moiseev does have the added dimension of firing something spinning here and there. I don't think Chauncey pressures in the way that Gregorian pressured to kind of, you know, put him in trouble. And again, that fight was as short notice as it gets. He went in there not preparing to go against Morocco Gorian, who was awesome. But he went in there not preparing to have that match. He put up a good show, but just the pressure of Morocco Gorian. Chauncey doesn't usually play with that pressure, but Chauncey plays with combination and low kicks. He is a kickboxer supreme. He's a fantastic athlete. This is just an awesome fight. I think Chauncey's going to get the victory here, but I'm telling you, this is what kickboxing is all about. These first two fights on the card, you know, Suarez, Denneberg, and Jess Chauncey and Moiseev. That's what kickboxing's all about when you see these guys perform very, very special talents. Sanchai makes his debut in the Glory brand as he takes on Nate Slamani. It's very important that I say this. It's special that Sanchai got this opportunity because when K1 was going around, there was rumors that maybe he would go up and wait and try it. Because this is a guy who, let me give you some, Sanchai's gone over to America and all around the world, and he's fought people at around 65 kgs. He's kind of fought up that high. And I remember he'd come over to America, and I remember he fought Kevin Ross a couple times, and he's fought like people, and he fights them at that weight class, so like bigger weight classes. And then he went back to Thailand, and then he fought at 126 pounds. And I was like, This guy is a small guy that really is testing his limits. And it's just me and Rob Cox were talking about him. And if you look at Rob Cox's, you know, documentary that they did when they did the it's a small documentary before they all went to Europe to fight. And it was Yotsen Kai, Sanchai, and there's one other guy, Anoa. And on that video, they talked about Sanchai. And he said, man, Sanchai could probably fight in K1, but they'd hate his style because of the dumps and that, you know, that kind of sort of thing or whatever. Sanchai is, you know, undersized, but he's super quick. He's going to do the jumping inside leg kick. He's going to play a body kick. He's going to play with movement. He's going to go out there and he's going to have fun. I think that Eddie Slimani is going to beat him. I think that Slimani is going to offer just enough. Now, Eddie's played in Muay Thai before, so Eddie might fall into the trap of playing with Sanchai's rhythm. But I'm telling you, because Slimani has the base to throw hands, I feel like this fight may not be the most beautiful fight in the world. I think there's some times where it can get a little gritty. I think his length, I think his volume could really help him. Sanchai can play counter-punching, but it doesn't do as much as he plays counter-kicking. He more plays counter-kicking, or he'll get into grappling positions where they go chest-to-chest. He'll try to stay active in those spots. It won't be the best reflection of his skill set, I personally feel. I felt like if they had a little bit lighter weight class, you could probably see him play with his boxing and some of the things that you would think that he couldn't do a little bit more. But I am going to go ahead and go out and say, and it's not a huge upset because, you know, Sanchai is doing something that's, like, not his sport. If this is full rules Muay Thai, I'd say Sanchai without even looking, you know, and that's with Slimani being a little bit bigger. But I'm going to go ahead and say Slimani is going to get a somewhat upset over Sanchai. Moving on to the women's fight, we've got Irina Mazepa. She takes on Isis Verbeek. Of course, Mazepa is a replacement for Iman Barlow. Iman Barlow found out that there was, between her infusion contract and what Gloria was asking, there were things that conflicted. Something that happened similar to Kevin Ross. Like, you want to fight for the brand, and you realize, hold on, the contract that I signed before doesn't allow me to do this as much as possible. So when Gloria and their team contacted her, she thought she was just doing the one fight, and then they came up with the tournament field. So then she said that she had to drop out of the fight. She said she can't do the tournament field because of those infusion obligations, but she said she'd be down to fight Tiffany in a one-off because that's what everybody wants to see. And she's right. That is what everybody wants to see. So I do believe that Mazepa is a good replacement on short notice, but that kills the tournament field. Like, there's nothing about the tournament field that makes me say, all right, this is an elite kickboxing tournament field. It's an okay tournament field, but it's pretty much Tiffany Von Suess versus the world's what the tournament looks like without Iman being in it. So we go ahead and we go Isis Verbeek, who is as veteran as it gets. She's fought all over the world, as is Irina Mazepa. They've you know, fought China, fought, you know, all over Europe. I'm going to go ahead and say Verbeek wins here. She's also got, you know, victories on the Infusion brand. Mazepa is going to put up a game performance, but I got Verbeek winning in a, you know, pretty entertaining fight. I do think that neither girl is kind of like, you know, going to fall into clinches. I think there's going to be some solid kickboxing here, and I think Verbeek wins. I moved to a light heavyweight bout that I think they said is for the interim title, which I don't like at all. I think that this is still a good fight that could just be a good fight. It necessarily has to be, again, this was supposed to be, Artem Vakhdov was supposed to be defending the title here against Buzidi. He got injured, so now Murad Buzidi goes against Zach Mikasa, who's been training at Hemmer's gym. Murad Buzidi is the better kickboxer, so that's where I'm going to lean. I think that he can score more consistent shots. I think he can score against his combination of kickboxing flaw. Zach Mikasa showed me good stuff in moments, and it being a five-round fight definitely limits his ability to find that crack the longer the fight goes on, if it is indeed a interim title fight. But I got Murad Buzidi winning this fight in Holland. I think it should be a lot of fun. I think it could have potential for Zach Mikasa to kind of find that right kind of shot, but it also has potential for Murad Buzidi to play good kickboxing and move around, because we keep forgetting Murad Buzidi has fought the best of the best, you know what I'm saying, in the heavyweight division, and now he's fighting at light heavyweight. So Mikasa has heavyweight type of crack, But Buzidi is a experienced, veteran, savvy kickboxer who should have his way with him for the majority of the rounds. I say 4-1 in the cards for Murad Buzidi. We go into it and we got a tournament's contender. We've got Harak Agourian as he takes on Johan Kangulo, and we've got Mirtho Grinhart as he takes on Kareem Beminazar. Looking at the tournament already, I think Mirtho Grinhart's going to win the tournament again. Like, that's just what I look like. This the contenders tournament. I'm looking at it right now, and I'm like, Mirtho's going to win again, and then Mirtho's going to get the rematch of a fight that most people felt he won with Nicky Holtzgen. But first, he's got to take on Kareem Beminazar. I just think that Grinhart has got it's not just too much skill, but too much aggression for him. Not just too much skill. I mean, not saying that Grunhardt's not skill, but I think that the difference will be the way he pushes the pace, the way he gets in there, looks for the big shots, looks for those kill shots. He's real slick with those knees here and there. The knees are sneaky from Grinhart because he throws with his hands so heavy that you forget about him at times. But he slides the knees in there well. I think he's going to get a stoppage over Beminazar. Harak Agourian versus Johan Kangulo is an interesting fight. An interesting fight. I will say this. Harak Agourian should be able to score more volume than Kangulo. But he's naturally fought smaller. That's what I'm thinking the difference is in my mind. But I'm going to go ahead and go with my gut here. And I'm going to say Agourian is going to outscore Kangulo and win. And move himself in the right direction. I just think that, you know, he showed good, you know, again, it's not the best sign because I feel Maximo Suarez is a smaller guy, but, you know, he's looked strong there at the weight class, threw good shots. I think that he can outwork Johan Kangulo. I think that the combination flow will get going. I think he will get the victory. And then I think it'll be Mirtho Grinhart, and I think it will be Harak Agourian. And when that happens, Grinhart, who is stronger and more natural at the weight class, should be able to get the victory. I think that he should be able to score something significant, should be able to be he should be fresh after his fight, because I think Kangulo and Gregorian is going to the scorecards. Like, that one might even go extra round. I think Grinhart will just be sitting there, tournament style, looking fresh, because Beminazar is a solid fighter. He's a tough dude, but man, I just don't see him in my mind presenting the kind of threat that it would take, you know, for him to beat Grinhart and even challenge him to that point, you know. And I've seen him fight several times in France, but I don't see him challenging him in any way that Grunhart's explosion won't be able to have its effects in him early. But I think Harak Agourian has a really good shot of beating Grinhart if it gets into the flow of a kickboxing match, because he'll beat him. He'll beat him in natural kickboxing acumen, combination low kick flow, finding, you know, being able to cut people off, being able to walk people down, you know, like, that's always going to be his game. And if Grinhart isn't able to blast him away, all of a sudden, Harak Agourian, you know, and Harak Agourian, their style of walking you down, pressuring you, and putting that combination flow, all of a sudden, we've got Grinhart playing on the back foot. And as soon as you get him there, Gregorian's got a shot. So I'm going to go ahead and change my initial answer right off the gun, and I'm going to go ahead and pick Harak Agourian to win this Saturday afternoon. He's going to win the tournament. I changed my mind. Grinhart, you're the guy. You're the man. But I still think there's a good chance that if Harak Agourian can get past Kangulo, I think he can beat you. So if I'm wrong, whatever. Next fight, Ishmael is going to take on Hezdy Higgins. Hezdy finally passed all that legal trouble that he's been dealing with for like 5 years. He is cleared of all charges, free to travel the world and be a prize fighter. He was still allowed to fight and travel before. He fought in China and, you know, been doing his thing, whatever. He's taking on Ishmael Lant, who has already earned a title fight. This is a super fight. This is a weird fight for me because, unchallenged, Hezdy Higgins has got better kickboxing acumen. Unchallenged. Kickboxing low kick flow on point for the very, very tall Hezdy Higgins. He just doesn't have KO stoppage. Like, he doesn't have that kind of power. Ishmael Lant most definitely has that kind of power, and he can get into spots where he can let his hands go. I can definitely see the difference in this fight being because Ishmael Lant is able to score down. But I'm telling you, if it goes to a decision, you know, like if it goes to a decision or if it goes to an extra round, I think Hezdy's going to beat him. I think Hezdy's got really, really good kickboxing. I think that he's just, he'll be able to take advantage of it. Lant's best bet is to play with the southpaw stance as much as he can during the fight and to get rid of that lead leg opportunity for the low kick game of Haggis. But it's just, it comes down to, will Ismael Lant score the right kind of shot? In that way, Anderson Broaddrick is, you know, was able to score those types of offensive shots as far as in the kickboxing goes. But I knew it was just a matter of time before Ismael Lant would get to him, and he did. Hesdy's chin isn't that questionable. Hesdy's, you know, actually been pretty durable as far as, you know, taking big shots and so on. This is a really interesting fight. I'm leaning towards Hesdy to win this fight, but it would be better for the momentum of, you know, what's happening right now with Rico Verheerven that Ismael Lant get the victory here, because then you've got Ismael Lant as a possible, you know, opponent. And I'm fine with Hesdy being an opponent, but I think if Hesdy won, he wouldn't get the shot. I think Hesdy would have to go into the tournament. But Hesdy, good fight for Rico. Lant, good fight for Rico. And, of course, the Badahari rumors, because now they're saying that Badahari is going to be there at the event to possibly set up, you know, those guys fighting down the road later this year. Because Badahari is not the name that he was in kickboxing, but he's still a name, and he's still a name in Amsterdam for damn sure. So we'll see what happens with that down the road. Finally, we get to the last fight I'm going to talk about, and this, you know, triple threat of the big kickboxing organizations. We talk about the one with the most significance for the weekend, probably, Robin van Roosmalen, the current, I won't say lightweight king, I'll say lightweight champion, because as long as Petrosian is out there, I am not going to say, until you get that victory, I'm not going to just clearly give you a pass on best in the world. This is for the glory, your glory reputation, though. It's important here. And Robin van Roosmalen rematches Sitichai, Sitsang Pinyang. I'm not going to lie, I was surprised that this came about. After van Roosmalen got the first win, I thought they'd be like, okay, Sitichai out. You know what I'm saying? We brought him in, gave him the opportunity. He got the stoppage. He's pretty aggressive for a Thai-style fighter. But after Robin van Roosmalen got that first win, I thought that they would play with people. The next people who get the opportunity would be Maracagorian types. Kickboxers. People who play the combination of low kick game. People who play with hand combos a little bit more than they put with kicks. I thought that that was coming for sure. For sure, that's what I thought was going to happen. Lo and behold, they make another tournament. Sitsang Pinong's in it. He beats David Kyria again. And then he goes on to beat, and I thought Maracagorian had some solid moments, but he beats Maracagorian as well. The first time these guys met, it seemed pretty clear that as far as scoring goes, Sitsang Pinyang should have been the Glory champion as far as total scores go. But Glory rules are now starting to come out and say stuff like, you know, and again, it's their rules, their organization. They don't value kicks to the arm as high as low kicks. Excuse me. They don't value those clinch knees as much, you know, unless they do, like, devastating damage. And pretty much they were saying the boxing scores of Sitsang Pinyang were all right, but they weren't great. And then they leaned towards Robin van Roosmalen, who, and again, I re-looked at the fight several times because I know people kind of felt the, you know, the flow of it just seemed so dominant for Sitsang Pinyang. When I re-looked at the fight, when I re-watched it, I could see two rounds that there was a pretty strong argument for van Roosmalen in the rounds, at least in a terms of being competitive. Like, I could see in those rounds there were spots. And, man, he let the body rips go, threw some hands upstairs. He had a couple rounds in there where you could, you know, get the judge to sway in your way in the way that K1 used to have some judges that swayed towards whoever Bukau was fighting for a little bit there. Like, when Bukau went against Albert Krauss, most people were like, Bukau beat Albert Krauss. But the scorecards went towards Bukau because, for whatever reason, the scorecards went towards Krauss, despite the fact that Bukau had been kicking his arms to death and so on. That happened to Bukau when he went against Andy Sauer as well. They didn't value the kicks to the arms as much. Sitsang Pinong has got to work through that now. To me, all he has to do is do everything the same, but go low kick instead of body kick. If he does that, I think that he wins. I think he wins 4-1 at worst. But plays that body kick. He slowed a little bit in 4 and 5. That also has to be mentioned in the last fight. We'll see what happens. I think this is one of those fights where we could see people upset by what the judges say in the end of it, because Van Roosmalen is going to be throwing that heat. He is going to be throwing hands, no questions about it. And when he gets his opportunity, he is going to look good on scorecards. He really is. So it just kind of comes down to what we're going to see from Van Roosmalen. I think that he could win a debated. I think he'll win a debated decision here. I hope he fights kickboxing more. He didn't look, you know, he took an MMA fight and it didn't look spectacular. But I do think his heart is towards playing with it a lot. But he's talented enough to win good kickboxing matches. And if he gets the victory here, there's a lot of fights that I like to see him in. I'd like to see him go against the winner of John C. Moise. I'd like to see him go against Morocco Gorian again if he gets a victory. Sitsong Pinong wins. It set some things up. They did a press conference in Thailand, so they're probably, you know, they're setting up to do a show. You know, whether it's in Bangkok, they should consider doing an outside show. Amsterdam, if you're gonna go to, Glory, if you're gonna, after you go to Amsterdam, after you go to, I think it's Virginia next, after you start to schedule these events, when you go to Thailand, don't find a building. Look to do your show outside and look to kind of go off of the strength of what you're going to do on TV. You might be able to do some on your gate, but don't expect huge gate numbers when you go to places like that. The goal, the focus for that type of a card should be, let's see how many people we can get to come out and see these kickboxers. If Sitsong Pinong is your champion, that's what you got to do. Then throw those same names in there. You know, go ahead, throw Johnsy in there. Go ahead, throw Moiseev in there. Throw guys in there to go against Sitsong Pinong in his home, wearing the best kickboxing crown in the world. It'd be a lot of fun. They really should consider that. And they should also consider trying to get Bukau. He's very famous because of Thai fight. He's popular in the country when he fights international. I thought he was a solid name. When he was a big international star in kickboxing and K-1, I thought he was a solid name in Thailand. But it's when Thai fight came about that I thought that he became a big name in Thailand. And it almost seems insane when people listen to it. But he did not have the greatest run in the Lumpini Stadium. I've said that before. So he wouldn't be considered one of the true legends of... He wasn't Anahuac in the stadiums. You know, he wasn't a legend in that way. He had a solid run to get there. And he didn't have a great run once he got there. But when he got into that, what was it? King of Fighting. It's looting me right now. When he got into that fight, when he's, you know, started to get that first international fight, and then he got the opportunity to get on the K-1 card, then it all, you know, turned around. We, you know, beat Jiang Weipar, beat Kohei Uramaki, and then beat Masato. Everything changed, but like it was definitely different. It was definitely different for him when he first went to Thailand, or he's coming up in Thailand, and then all of a sudden you got him in Thai fight, and then he's on TV all the time, and huge audiences are seeing him because all they do is care about big crowds. They don't really care about gate numbers for Thai fights TV show there too, and he was able to make himself a big star. They should consider him. They really should consider him if Glory's going to go down there. Maybe they sign a one-fight deal, but Sitsong Pinong being there, Sanchai being there, Bukau, there are some good options for them to have a pretty good card in that area. So that's my show. Thanks everybody for, following the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Sit down and enjoy your kickboxing weekend. The big three are going. Everybody who's, you know, people are making, you know, Kunlun would be considered the big four. They'd be in there because Kunlun's paying and they've got good tournaments. So those four make up the ways to make money as a prize fighter in kickboxing. I'm excited for the opportunities of a lot of these guys and girls, and it should be a fun weekend. So notice that in all the cards, not Japan yet, but in the cards that I mentioned, we have Glory with female fights, we've got Bellator female fights, and it's a good thing, you know. So we'll go ahead and move on from here. God bless everybody. Thank you for following the show, and have a good one. Peace.